The morning we left, it was 60 degrees. We got gas for 211. But other than that, it's nice to be here. First world problems. You ever come across these? There are problems. There are things that are true problems for people. And then there are first world problems. A definition that I found for this is a relatively trivial or minor problem or frustration, which implies a contrast with serious problems such as those that may be experienced in the developing world. So essentially what first world problems are when you don't have to worry about the big things, you find other things to worry about. If you're not worried about where you're going to live and what you're going to eat and those things, we find other things. And they say these are problems that only occur in first world countries. I went online and found a little list of some first world problems that I could find. See if any of these either sound familiar or if you feel so very bad for these people who have these very trying problems. One person says, these are all tweets, I believe. It says, peeling pomegranates has to be one of the most painstaking tasks in the world. First world problem. I have a paper cut on my iPad finger. Every tweet is agony, but I persist bravely. A swan just spit in our salsa. You don't worry about that in some places, and sometimes you do. The worst thing about my mom having a cupcake business is that I hate cake, and that's all there ever is to eat. Weep for these people, right? Really sick and tired of this place using too much orange zest in my brunch mimosa. My wallet is too small. I can't fit all this money in my wallet. And my dog has hiccups. You see these, you go on Twitter, and you see hashtag first world problems, and we laugh about that, and we say, you know, there's just an example of maybe you say privilege, or maybe you say just the way that humans find something to complain about, no matter what is going on, no matter how much our needs are taken care of. We see, even with people who should have nothing to complain about, we have first world problems. So what's wrong with that? It's funny to laugh at. We probably find ourselves at times saying, after we complain about something, boy, maybe that wasn't something that was worth taking the time to complain about. Maybe we say, I've got a first world problem. But the one problem with first world problems is it can perhaps make us dismissive, or can make us not recognize that there are people with very real problems out there. There are people who don't have the things that we take for granted, that when we focus on these first world things, we sometimes can put ourselves in a place where we are not sensitive to the needs of somebody else. I think another problem with first world problems, and maybe that we can relate to with churches, I think we have very real first world church problems. I heard this put in a way in a lesson that I was watching recently, where it says, for a long time in the church when it was starting, there were problems of trying to get the message of Jesus out, to make sure that people knew who Jesus was, why it mattered what Jesus did, and it was a struggle for a while. You look at your Bibles, you look at early church history, it was a struggle. Fast forward to today, and we don't have the same struggle, I don't think, in churches. We know about Jesus. Go to any church in town, they know about Jesus and believe the same things about Jesus that we do. And while the early church was struggling with trying to get the message of Jesus only, we have gone past Jesus only very often to what this guy that I was listening to called Jesus Plus. And we say, you need to have not just Jesus, but you need to have Jesus plus. And you add on your own doctrinal issues. You add on your own things that we worry about. And the problem with Jesus plus instead of Jesus only is, if you notice the problems between churches and between congregations, the fights are not about Jesus. They're about the plus. Right? We fight about all those extra things. We say, of course we agree about the most important things, so let's fight about something else. It is something that I think is harmful to the church as a whole. It's something that is very easy to end up doing. For the same reason that we end up with first world problems when we don't have to worry about food and shelter and clothing, we find other things. When we don't have we don't have to worry about these issues of people knowing Jesus and believing Jesus, we find other things to disagree about. This is something that God's people have been doing for a very long time. I'm not trying to beat up on us. If you go to Matthew chapter 12, you see that these first world church problems, if you want to call it that, happened even before there was a church. Within among the Jews, they had the same things happen. For some people in Matthew 12, you see that the Sabbath was the issue. Some people made it very important that the most important thing we do is we make sure everybody's following the Sabbath rules. And Jesus comes along and is not interested in following their rules. Jesus heals people on the Sabbath. In chapter 12 there, Jesus and some of his disciples were going through a grain field on the Sabbath, and they grabbed some grain and ate. Somebody says, that's harvesting. That's work. That is not something you do on the Sabbath. And Jesus points out to them the things that really matter. Talks to them about that God created the Sabbath for man, and not man for the Sabbath. He talks about when the prophets say, I desire mercy and not sacrifice. He says you're missing the big things to argue about little things. And then he said to them in verse 11, if any of you has a sheep and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will you not take hold of it and lift it out? How much more valuable is a man than a sheep? Therefore, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. This is after criticizing him for healing somebody. And the funny thing that I came across somewhere is this question of a sheep or an animal falling into a pit on the Sabbath really was a debate at the time. In the Dead Sea Scrolls, we found writings. It's not just biblical writings they found, the other things that they're writing about. And there really was a debate going on about, can you rescue an animal or even a person on the Sabbath, or is that work? One writer saying, you're able to go to the edge of the pit and lower your garment down as long as you didn't actually do lifting. And if they pulled themselves up, then you're good. Others disagreeing. And so this question where Jesus asks, wouldn't you get animal out of the pit? We say, of course you would. They didn't say, of course you would. There might have been even debate there. There's one of those things where he's trying to say, pay attention to the big stuff when they're very focused on those little things, the stuff that where there was disagreement. So first world church problems is not a new problem. But I think it is a problem. And I don't think it is just a Church of Christ problem, but I think it is a Church of Christ problem. I think we get into a lot of very unnecessary fights. You ever come across anybody with very strong opinions about a translation of the Bible? It's not just the King James people. I've seen people anti-King James, which is very strange. You say, you say only you won't use one version. Well, I say, don't use that version, which really is just doing... You've heard these fights. Maybe I have some friends. One in particular, I've been in a Bible bookstore with him, and he sees a new translation. Well, let me find out. He's got his text where he knows whether this is a good Bible or not because he goes to there. We forget that when we focus so much on something like that on translation issues, we forget how many languages in this world have no translation of the Bible. We forget how many people have no access to a Bible, who don't know the basic things because of language or location problems. And there's such a disconnect there, where we have real problems versus the things we like to fight about. Or have you ever, I don't know if you've been in this spot. I know I find myself in teaching at the college, and especially when I'm teaching the general education classes. So these are not Bible majors. These are all kinds of majors. All kinds of backgrounds, and talking about some example about arguments in churches, and I bring up something about instrumental music, and I get a confused look from large portions of the class. Like, what is there? This look of just not even understanding, why is there a problem? Why is there an argument over that? It's not even saying that they take a different stance than many churches of Christ say, but there are people that legitimately don't know that there is an argument being had. A friend of mine says that churches of Christ are answering questions that nobody else is asking. And it's not just us. I mentioned when we were talking about the end of time stuff. Remember, we were talking about the wait that we are in for Christ's return. And I said, I remember going to a church where they're having a spirited discussion about millennial issues in their youth group. And I, being the nerdy Bible kid who, you know, I got Bible Bowl trophies and things like that, I have no idea what they're talking about. Because in their tradition, it's something that they really get concerned about, and it's one we don't. So many of these conversations are being had that in our own little bubble, this is of great importance. And elsewhere, they're having their own same sort of thing. And I think so often we get so tied up in these first world church problems that we forget what we share. We forget that it's possible to have different Christ-centered goals among churches, that we can do things differently, we can have different goals and have them, and have all these goals still be Christ-centered. I've been reading a book that is well put together about why the churches of Christ do the things the way we do. And it's talking about restoration, the ideas that of the restoration movement of Barton Stone, Alexander Campbell, the things that started our tradition. And he's showing how if we are going to be about restoring what the New Testament church did, then we should be doing this and we should be doing this. And he makes very well-reasoned arguments, and I can't dispute anything he's saying, except when the conclusion then goes to, and therefore that's the only way to do things. I said, my thought is, if you are attempting to do restoration, then yes, that makes sense. But there are other biblically sound approaches where you can understand why somebody is doing what they're doing. I don't want to go too far on the deep end. I hope I haven't already. Let's put a bow on this. What can we do then? I did not intend to get up here and complain. And I hope it didn't come across like that. But there are times that I think we allow the little things to become big things and forget what we share on the big things. I think this is a season coming up where many people and many families and many churches are harmed by allowing little things to get in the way of big things. We have Thanksgiving coming up. And how many families either dread coming to the dinner table for what might be said, or come away from the dinner table wishing you hadn't been there because somebody disagreed and it turned into something bigger? How many times, with Christmas season approaching, do we see churches trying to reach out and celebrate Jesus, but somebody said something a little different way than somebody else, and now we are further apart from somebody at a time we should be coming together? Let's try to talk about the things that we have in common. Let's try to share the things that are most important. At Thanksgiving this week, somebody at the table may disagree with you. may have voted different than you, may worship different than you. Somebody may even cheer for Ohio State. I know. But why are they at the same table as you? Not where I was going with that. We remember we come to the table as family. We come together to worship as family. We need to keep the most important things most important. And there is nothing more important than Jesus and the gospel story of God coming to earth as one of us, living a perfect life, taking on our sin in death and rising again. That shouldn't be a given when we talk about our faith. That shouldn't be one of those things that go, obviously that, now let's talk about this instead. Let's talk about the most important things. And maybe if we keep the most important things, or in class, we was talking about this morning, we're looking at worry and said, seek first the kingdom of God. Then take care of those other things. Let's not let our first world church problems get in the way of the incredible things that we share as a family. This morning, if there are any of these things that you need prayers for, if you need to say, I've been letting little things get in the way and I need to refocus, you need the prayers, please share with that with us. This is family, right? If you need to be baptized this morning, if you need to say, there is a most important thing that the gospel is most important and I need to respond to that gospel today through baptism, there's no better time to do it. You're with family. If there's anything you need this morning, please let us know as we stand and sing.
Have you been to Jesus for the cleansing power?